Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 292 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'm sending you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
On the last podcast of 2015, nonetheless, on 292.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's been a long one this year, and we're getting through it like this. We have no box office ace because really everything is out into play until next year. But we do have some trivia. We have our worst of 2015 list, not our best yet. That'll be coming next podcast. And a little bit of reviews here. We got reviews for The Hateful Eight, The Revenant, Concussion, and Star Wars, A Very Merry Christmas, and A Case of You. But trailers is where it lies today because we got Linklater's latest. Say that three times fast. We have Everybody Wants Some, Independence Day 2, Star Trek 3, Moonwalkers, something said Desierto. I'm going to take a pass on that. And Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which looks like our brand is Crisis Part 2. So let's get into what? I guess we're not getting into the game because there is no box office ace game. This is a strange
segue.
There isn't.
I mean, we could talk a little bit about Star Wars and how it may have a shot at the $1 billion domestic gross. What do you think?
Yeah, this thing is hurling towards that thing at a lightning pace.
Only a 40% drop second weekend. We're at 540 right now. I mean, the thing about this is obviously these guys have a steep cliff of a drop off. So maybe... You know, I mean, clearly, I think at this point it beats Avatar, right?
It does. But let's see about tickets sold. Let's not just go about gross here. Like, Avatar sold 90.
Go by gross.
No, because we can estimate now. 94 million tickets were estimated sold for Avatar. 94 to 97 million, which is a shitload of tickets. Right now, Star Wars has sold about 52 million.
It's like almost a decade apart, right?
But that's why we got to look at gross ticket sales. So Titanic sold about 130 million tickets. That's almost out of play at this point. I should believe that they can't do three times this gross. But if it does hit $1 billion here in the States, that's astronomical. I mean, it really is. And Fandango is saying 42% of all the people that bought tickets for it the first time around are going back and seeing it again through their service. I know I've seen it twice in the theater. By happenstance, I mean, it wasn't on purpose, but a lot of people in that showing were talking about this is, you know, so-and-so's second time, and our son's already seen it three over here, but our daughter's taking us to it. It's become it's a cultural phenomenon at this point.
Fastest,
it's not even a movie.
Fastest $2 billion worldwide. The box office split right now is 50-50, pretty much. Don't have China yet, though. China opens next month, so I mean, we're looking at a possible, $3 billion. We're going to beat Avatar again worldwide.
Although I gotta say here, the asterisk is that China is never really taken to Star Wars. It's the one, Asian countries, I guess, have been a hard sell for whatever reason. But they've done a shitload of marketing.
When you look at everything that's come before this recently in the past 10 years, you gotta say probably going to do pretty well.
I see at least $100 million coming from there, which is going to be just adding to the overall total. It's breaking records everywhere. But when does the backlash start? Do you think that the Star Wars backlash starts at some point because of the fact that when something gets so popular, people find something to nitpick about?
I don't know. We haven't really seen I haven't seen a lot of backlash myself, aside from me. But I'm that's usually frontlash. I don't know. I mean, with the Avengers, we didn't see backlash until Age of Ultron, really. And then we saw quite a bit of it. But so maybe, with the spinoffs of Star Wars, we maybe start seeing a little bit of something. I don't know.
I saw a great, nobody likes trolls on the internet. Let's be honest here. I like to punch people in the fucking face.
I love them. I kiss them. Trolls.
Nobody likes any trolls. But at the same time, I've seen a couple of, internet memes that are just fucking fantastic. And one was the meme. The top of it was Newman, the fat guy from Jurassic Park, in the scene from Jurassic Park when he hands him the shaving kit with the eggs. And he says, be quiet. He says, see this guy, nobody cares. And it says, oh, so episode 7 has the same plot as episode 4. And it turns around and says, nobody cares. It's classic because it's true. Nobody gives a shit because it's pulled off with such style and grace, which I'll get to later in my review. But the fact of the matter is this thing is selling an astronomical amount of tickets. I mean, it broke Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday's box office daily records last week. That's fucking crazy. And this is a time of year when people are supposed to be distracted. And I think next weekend it does very well. And then the 4-day President's Day weekend after that, at least $850 million at this point, right? At least.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I'm hoping we can do, you know, just that extra 150, 200. And I would really love to see that billion mark get made, because I really want something like this. The records right now that we're setting are pretty great. Some of them, you know, fastest to 1 billion may be broken. I think opening week is going to stand for quite a while, and so is a single day. So it'd be nice to see something other than Avatar, which is set there for a while, you know, break that record and sit there for a little while longer, you know?
Well, when box office, I guessed 248 on this is what my final was, which was right on the money at for the opening weekend. And you had texted me that night and you said, I don't think anything breaks this, even Avatar 2, because nothing will be this front loaded.
I don't think Avatar 2 is going to be that front loaded.
Right. Now, Avatar 2 may go on to have a great multiplier like the first one did. Who
it's
knows?
It's going
to
have a great opening, but I don't think it's going to have this opening.
I would agree with you at this point. Yeah, I don't think that anything will have this kind of frenzied fever, even episode
including 8. The sequels to these. Yeah, I don't see it happening. You know,
I think this is the high watermark, much like we saw with Phantom Menace in the first or the prequel go around. So, but enough about Star Wars. Now let's get into a little bit of trivia, which actually is Star Wars related.
What?
I think that you
James
might
Bond?
Actually, you want one? I got one. No, let's do a Star Wars one tonight. All right, let's do a Star Wars one. Which is the only Star Wars movie out of the original six that wasn't the highest grossing movie of the year for the year it came out? Do you understand?
Sure. So
in 77.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, or whatever the year.
That's actually
was.
An easy one.
Which, what is it?
Well, it's clearly, it has to be Attack of the Clones.
It is Attack of the Clones. Yes. Do you know what film?
And clearly, yeah, because Spider-Man, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Which had set the opening weekend record of $114 million that summer. Which now you look at that, you think it's almost puny by comparison. You know, if the next X-Men movie might open up. With
yeah,
that.
But I mean, I still think that's really awesome.
It was the first time that number was ever broke. To me, that was
back
substantial.
Look at 1977, right? Look at. You know, lots of watershed moments at the box office, right? That are really cool, but yeah, or fucking nothing nowadays, unless you look at Butts in the Seat.
Yeah. Of which Spider-Man, I believe, sold around 80 million tickets, which is obviously an amazing amount of tickets.
Yeah.
So yeah, all right, well done there on the trivia. You wiped me on that one.
All clean.
Thank you.
Wiped you up.
It's like a nice baby wipe. It's like they shower in the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. Debate. What are we talking about tonight? We're talking about Redbox. Let's talk about Redbox a little bit, because you're saying it's in trouble, and now their president has stepped down, and it looking like they might go the way of Blockbuster. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean Redbox, you know, run by a kiosk company that does
CoinStar, the whole thing.
CoinStar. They take the you got your e-waste things like a phone you don't want, you put in there, give you some money for it or whatever. Yeah, revenues are down, right? Quite a bit. They're still high enough to where we're going to have Redbox for a while. Don't panic. But, you know, it's the beginning of the end. You can see it, you know, and it's all over Netflix, DVDs, all these disc-based services are going to go bye-bye, right? And discs themselves, sooner probably than later, are gonna actually disappear. It's crazy.
Well, because this was such a huge market 10 years ago, and they were making such
enormous
astronomical amounts of money on this ancillary market.
Every year they made more money.
Until about 2009. Even 2010 saw good growth, but after that it substantially dropped off because they said of things like Netflix streaming was the big thing. But after
that, streaming
is what people are doing. I mean, that's just how it's being delivered.
It caught on more than I think anyone ever thought that it would. You know, so they're going to have to find a way to deliver because, you know, renting online, it really is no different than renting at a Blockbuster back in the day. They charge you $5 for a damn new movie, which is an arm and a leg as far as I'm concerned. If you're going to be renting something, $5 for rental is a lot. Mm-hmm. Considering that's a quarter of the price to buy the fucking thing. You know, that's a lot of money. So Redbox still kind of wins out there with the $1.50 or whatever it is now. I think they're going to be alive for a little while longer, but at some point you're going to quit. As I have pretty much, I have Netflix through the mail. I know you do. You have the DVDs through the mail, as well. It's the only way to get a lot of the new stuff nowadays. So you're kind of forced to do it, but I don't know. You kind of get weaned off it a little bit, don't you, with the amount of streaming stuff that's available there? I mean, now Amazon is offering add-ons like Showtime. You know, you can get Stars for another $9 a month, and they have new movies. So there are ways to get newer movies now streaming that's actually cheap enough.
Between my Apple TV, Netflix, my HBO, you know, Go account, my Showtime account, and honestly, Xfinity XF1 has an amazing amount of video on demand, which I can find pretty much any category or library title I'm looking for on Netflix. I just can't own it, but really, I'm looking more to watch than own at this point anyways. I can't go back and rewatch half the movies in my lifetime that I'd like to. So at this point, we're past the breaking point on that. So I just think that Redbox has tried different things like incorporating video game rentals, raising their prices altogether, and they're still bleeding money. So I think really we got about a 2-year, 24-month period before they just say, fuck it. These things, and about 4 years ago, 2011, these things were exploding. These have been around now for roughly 8 years. I think I saw my first one in 2007, mm-hmm. around that time. I'm sure they were in existence a little bit, maybe 2006 even. But they hit their zenith, I want to say, in about 2009, 2010, and since then have been on the downside.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think 2013 they had an up year as far as revenue goes, but less people renting. So,
well, you know, one of their top renters of all time was like Sam. Now he's doing stuff exclusively for Netflix streaming. So mm-hmm. it just goes to show you like where this is all headed. I mean, Netflix is becoming its own network. It really is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, they released the list of the most top downloaded movies of 2015, and it's kind of surprising because there's some layover from last year's movies. Did you see this list at all?
I have not seen the list, no.
Well, in 2014, the top downloaded movie, was The Wolf of Wall Street from 2013. All that was released late in the year. So
yeah,
but that
right,
had 30 million downloads. Well, this year's top downloaded movie was Interstellar, strangely enough, with 46 million downloads. So, I mean, that's a huge increase on the number one movie. Number two was Furious 7 with 44 million. The Avengers at 41 million. Jurassic World at 36, no surprise there. Mad Max at 36. American Sniper, which I find kind of surprising, at 34. 50 Shades of Grey, not surprising again, at 32. The Hobbit, 31. Terminator, 31. And Secret Service at 30. What I do find interesting is that they say that downloading is at an all-time high. Piracy is killing the industry, this, that, and the other. All of 10 of these movies were massive successes at the box office, except really The Terminator. And I got to believe that a significant chunk of these downloads are also coming from outside the United States, where these release dates are being delayed, where things are pirated and on the market before they reach theaters there because of the mm-hmm. fact that they're held back and they're available here in the States. So I just think that argument goes by the wayside, and the fact that these were downloaded millions and millions of times, and all of these, save for Terminator, really hit 100 million or more at the box office, in some cases significantly more.
Yeah, well, I mean, popularity, of course, obviously is going to beget popularity.
I just would think
a popular movie that everyone knows about is the one they're going to want to download, right? Those are the big movies, so it makes sense.
I would think that a movie, though, that, you know, is like, let's say Fantastic Four, for instance, mm-hmm. that didn't do so well at the box office, but maybe there's a buzz or kind of an interest in it because
but
of the material. Wouldn't
nobody wants to see that.
Which surprises – which just goes to say the fact that, like, a bad movie is a bad movie in the sense. You know, I get that. But
yeah, they don't want it. They want the big movies. They want to see them. You know, we don't know – I don't know. It would be interesting to see the time breakdown as far as release goes for when those numbers accrue. You know, is it – do they take a dive when the movies come out to home video?
Yeah, or are these being downloaded like a streaming service themselves? You know, are people using that like its own – free library.
I don't know. Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I mean. When there's time, obviously, even in theaters when they make a lot of money, but when they're not available, when they do become available, does that number drop significantly or does it go up? Shit, who knows?
I just find it very interesting. Things like Furious 7, Avengers 2, and Jurassic World all did about 1.5 billion in global sales, and we're downloaded an additional, 120 you know, or 1 billion times. It's all right, it's 120
million. So how many people aren't going to the theater, you know?
How much more could it have, you know, are we looking at 3 billion at that point?
Well, that's why, it's interesting, you know, is that why attendance is down, right? Probably.
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that, but yeah, possibly. But although this winter season was fucking bustling at the box office. And there was a lot of you out there, including myself, that went, and yourself, that went to the movies this holiday weekend, knows that it was furious with activity. People were everywhere this weekend at the box office. It was great. So, and a lot of those movies leaked online. So, No, but you know, it's obvious. Variety did a write-up that Hateful Eight leaked online. The Revenant leaked online. Joy, Concussion, pretty much everything in theaters.
That happens every year.
Still, because it's screeners, they got the problem. People still went out, though, and saw these movies. So did it really affect the bottom line? And how much so? I would love to figure that out one day and see what
they're... I still think... I mean, I don't think that is ever going to hurt theater stuff because the theater experience is so much different than downloading something and watching it, right?
Exactly. Period. I think so, too.
I think you're okay in that regard to it. But what obviously that is going to hurt is going to be home video, right?
I don't know, because a lot of these, you're looking at, I mean, Jurassic World, Furious, and Avengers, those are the top three selling discs of the year so far. And
Mad Max, how many of those people don't download, right? I mean, you're getting extra people to buy something. You have to admit that those sales are down anyway. So when you see a jump like that and it's something special, how many of those people wouldn't fucking buy movies, right, period, but will buy that?
Yeah, I can see what you're saying.
So you kind of have to wonder what, like, are the people downloading... Are they part of that group that's just waiting? Like they want the movie before, but then they're going to buy it later, or does it really impact it? You know, I don't know.
And what state of download is this? Is this a camera copy? Is this a DVD quality copy?
That's a good question as well.
Like, I want to know what exactly they're watching here. Are they watching, you know, Joe Bob with his camcorder back in Mississippi steal one of these bad boys? Or are they watching something from China? Like, what's going on here? I want to know exactly what's happening.
We need more detailed reports on piracy, damn it.
I know. Can we please get one of these?
Can I get a box office mojo of piracy, please?
Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with our list of the worst films of 2015.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Okay, we're back.
Oh.
Hell of a break.
Thank you. I got a full sip of water there.
Got a breather in, yeah. One out. I'm good to go for another hour or so.
The buckle a little bit and undo the pants. All right, let's get this.
All right. Oh boy, we got a list for you. We got the top 15, right? We both got 15 movies.
Strangely, and you know, off air, you said something to me. You said, "Oh, this was a bad year in films," and I vehemently denied that. I wanted to argue with you all, and then I picked out 15 movies instead of the usual.
Feel free to argue with me. I think really my issue is that it's just a lackluster. You know, really, everything is so kind of like, you know.
I will disagree.
And there was a couple of great ones, but there were a couple of great ones, and that's it.
I will say this. The great ones were great this year. I really, really enjoyed what I liked, and I really hated. I felt like there was not a lot of middle of the road. I felt that there was stuff that I really disliked and things that I could even include it on this. Yeah, I was really on extremes on this list when I went down it.
Basic shit. All right.
So we got 15. Let's go ahead and you and I, let's get through the bottom five pretty quickly so that we can get to our top.
My
15th pick is Chappie for the year, a movie I know you enjoyed more than myself.
Crazy. I think that's a fine movie.
I was let down by this one. What do you got on your 15th spot?
Aloha.
Yeah. That'll make an appearance on mine. But I know you, again, you enjoyed this one a little bit more than me. So I'm surprised you put it on your list. Was it that bad ending scene?
Well, I had to make a list. It's not a good movie. You know, you really can't defend it. I like the actors and I really like the dialogue and the direction, you know, per scene. As a movie, it's a piece of shit.
What do you got at 14?
I got Furious 7.
Ooh, which was really, I was going to go on my list, but I watched it again and I didn't hate it as much as I did the first time.
I'm not even going to watch it again ever. I hate it. I hate that movie.
The best thing about the movie was that I saw it in the D-Box seats that move and it was good.
I saw it on the IMAX laser projection system, which it looked fucking amazing on, but a horrible movie.
Strange that we saw it on two different gimmick devices, if you think. You know, I saw it on a moving seat. You saw it on a laser projection. And yet, it's the same movie that gave us two different experiences in a reel.
You should go see one a real IMAX laser projection system, and it'll blow your socks off.
Ooh, I wanted to blow something else. Okay, at 14, I got Tomorrowland.
Mm. Yeah, that doesn't make my list, but I do have San Andreas, a movie I know you kind of liked.
Ooh, is that okay? All right, is that your 13th spot?
Yeah,
San Andreas. Yeah, it's not that I kind of liked it. I just thought it was dumb fun. I can't defend it in any sort of logical manner.
That was my problem with it. It was just dumb.
It was dumb from the beginning.
I didn't find so much fun in it.
When the helicopter went in the crevice and didn't crash, I knew from there what plane we were talking about.
Oh, God.
In my 13th spot, I have Seventh Son, the really forgotten about bad sword and sorcery movie that came out earlier this year with Jeff Bridges doing a strange impression.
You tried to tell me you kind of liked that movie.
Yeah, I kind of did, and then I realized it was dog shit. Yeah. So
It wasn't very good.
No good. And then in your 12th spot, what do you got?
I got Hot Pursuit, a movie I know you liked, but I didn't find funny at all. And I mean, talk about just run-of-the-mill.
I can't defend it, but I liked it. In my 12th spot, I got a bad comedy. I got Get Hard, a really bad comedy, I thought, with Will Ferrell. And I just really thought
it's interesting because I think we're exact opposites on our 12s there. As far as like that movie was, I was okay with. I mean, I'm not going to defend it because it's not great, but I was okay with that. You're okay with Hot Pursuit.
All right. What do you got in 11?
I got The Lazarus Effect, which I don't know. It's like a sleeping pill.
Strangely enough, in my 11th spot, I have a horror movie too, but it was the opposite of a sleeping pill because it shocked me in the submission. The Green Inferno, Eli Roth's very little seen film about a cannibal tribe that was equally humorous and disgusting sometimes in the same scene, especially when they were doing virgin checks on the girls, if you know what I mean. So save yourself.
Sounds more interesting than Lazarus.
Yeah. At least it was shocking, I guess.
All right. Yeah. All right, what's your number 10?
I actually realized that I have two number 10s on this list.
No, you only get one number 10. What are you trying to do? You trying to make 16? We said 15. What are you trying to do? All right, two number 10s. What
you
got?
Yeah, I guess I did. I got Run All Night, Liam Neeson's shitty movie this year that was a waste of time for all
of them. One of them.
Yes, one of the two. I agree.
What's your number 10?
Another number 10 was 50 Shades of Grey.
See, I didn't see that yet, but I've heard.
Well, you'd be 50 Shades of Fucked Up.
I've heard I don't need to watch it.
It is all bad, my man. Save yourself the trip and the next two. Avoid.
That's what everyone says.
What do you got in the 10
spot? Number 10 is, unfortunately, Terminator Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
A movie that I still kind of like it, but yeah. It's not
good. You can't defend it in any sort of manner, though.
It's horrible. It has horrible. The second act is horrendous, but the first act is just so. I don't know. I'm kind of glad to be back in that world again. So I have like this. I have this soft spot for Terminator movies, but God, the last two just really done me in.
Salvation, I still thought was bad, but then this took it to a whole new level because it disregarded what had come before, and I had enjoyed 2 and 3. And especially 2, obviously, which was like a seminal movie to me as a child. And really, I was upset that this is how what we've done now to this character, and that it was a watered down version of Schwarzenegger appearing, calling him Pops. Are you fucking kidding me? That's the Terminator. You show him some respect. All right. I have in the 9th spot Aloha, a movie you previously mentioned. Phenomenally bad Cameron Crowe movie who continues to get further and further away from making the gems that he once produced. And I just really hope he can regain himself because he's a talented filmmaker. And I don't know what his goal was with this movie, but he obviously was on screen.
Well, he's got some confused films out there. My number 9, it was Jupiter Ascending, a movie I really wanted to like. And still, for some reason, I have a soft part for it. I think I just block out the fact that I've seen it, and I still hope that it's good, you know? I don't know. You ever seen a movie like that?
Yeah, are you forgetting that he was half dog?
Jupiter Ascending. Oh, God, it's fucking horrendous. No, I forget all of it. No, because it has to be, you know, if I watch it again, it has to be good, right?
It's never going to be good.
I know. It's such a letdown after their, Cameron Crowe, you know. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, you think of Wachowskis, you think Matrix, you know.
Speed Racer, even. You
and
think,
I God, you know, they do such good movies, such good work sometimes. And then you wind up with this, and it's like, how did that happen?
I would recommend anyone to watch Cloud Atlas over Jupiter Ascending if you have the time. Mm-hmm. In my eighth spot, I have Terminator Genesis, which you already alluded to is a bummer. I had it a little higher up on the list because I'm a Terminator fanatic too, and I really was found this so disappointing because the pre-release hype with Cameron saying that he was back in it had me kind of going. I got suckered again, and what do you know? Mm-hmm. It was a con job. They're grifters, and I paid the money and got taken for the ride.
We'll do it again when the new one comes out.
Yeah, gladly so. Here's my money now, you pricks.
My number eight was Run All Night. Just a bad movie. And, you know, what a great lineup. And then just what a nothing of a movie, right? I mean,
why make him an alcoholic again? How many times do we have to see that?
I'm sick of that. Yeah, I'm done. I'm pretty much done with Liam Neeson at this point. They've kind of drug him through the dirt enough for me.
My problem is that nobody went and saw Walk Amongst the Tombstone, which is arguably his best movie since the original Taken. So, people, see that movie. Mm-hmm. Don't waste your time with Run All Night.
Okay, what's your number seven?
Number seven is Man from U.N.C.L.E., which I found to be repetitive and uninvolving. All the way through, I thought the acting was bland. They recited their lines. I didn't give a shit about what was happening on screen and found no cleverness or creativity. You enjoyed it more than I know. And even People Magazine or Time, one or the other, I think it was Time actually, put this on the top 10 of the year, which blew my mind. So I know it has some sort of fans or cult following out there already, but not from this reviewer.
Yeah, it didn't make my top 15. You know, I didn't think it was that bad of a movie.
I hate
it. But my number seven is SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, which is a horrible movie.
Yeah.
I'm done. I really don't want to talk about that movie.
Heard that universally.
Yeah. Waste of time.
My sixth is Jupiter Ascending, which you've already much pointed out all the bad things about it. And I was really looking forward to this one because of the things you mentioned, the Wachowskis. And I got to recommend people to watch, so watch V for Vendetta over this. I mean, watch anything but this, because this is not really – I don't know if it was meddled with after the fact. I can't even blame it on this, because this is so confused from the jump and the storytelling is so bad.
The whole world just doesn't make sense.
That I have to blame it on that this wasn't really they didn't either have their hearts in the material when they set out to make this, or that it just somehow got transmuted. But they know, and I've heard them say that that was their last chance at ever doing a big budget film again. And you know, you strike out so many times, and I mean, The Matrix was a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm upset Cloud Atlas didn't get the love that it deserves.
But, yeah, that's always going to mystify me as well. And people still don't look at it when it's on demand. I've never heard has any sort of revival or following. It pisses me off. Mm-hmm.
All right, my number six is Unfriended, a horrible little horror movie that's just a computer screen the whole time. Bad movie.
Yeah, I couldn't even do it to myself.
Bad movie. Yeah, don't bother. Don't watch it. No good.
All right, now we get to the cream of the crop or the bottom of the shitter, depending on how you look at it here. So this is the turd that goes to the bottom.
Oh, right boy. I think we're probably going to have pretty much the same movies. Let's see. Well, I know so I got far, one that you don't, so I know you have one that I don't.
We've been very similar so far. I mean, we haven't been as far off as in past years, so maybe our best of next episode will be very similar too.
All right.
In the fifth spot, I have Fantastic Four, the woefully misguided attempt at rebooting the superhero franchise was just as bad as the pre-release buzz suggested. What do you got?
Well, I have Paul Blart Mall Cop Dose,
which I enjoyed for some reason.
Horrible fucking movie. You're out of your mind. Your mind.
I thought that and Hot Tub 2 were both movies that were critically revealed, and I both liked them. I liked them both.
Okay. What's your number four?
Number four is another a comedy that didn't hit for me. It was Mordecai. The
same
Johnny
here.
Depp. In the fourth spot, nonetheless, huh?
Yep. I knew we were going to have the ones, because your Fantastic Four was the one that's going to be different. We haven't got to my different one yet. So Mordecai, of course. Let me do my number three, and let's see if it's the same. I got Black Hat.
We're gonna probably miss positions here, because in my third spot, I have Taken 3, which was the other bad Liam Neeson movie.
Sure.
Of the year. In my second spot, I do have Black Hat, which was
Black Hat.
So disappointing, because Michael Mann and what looked like it could be something. You got Chris Hemsworth, which they continually try to launch into leading man roles. And as much as I like the guy,
it's a goofy movie, though. It's a goofy movie.
It's an uninformed movie in a subject
that is
supposed to be authentic. That's what makes the whole thing.
That's the problem with it, though, because you can't do a Tom Cruise character who's clearly just, I'm Tom Cruise, I'm beautiful, I'm action star, I do computers, you know, let me code this with my butt cheeks, and I'll, you know, buns of steel, and I'll look good while I'm doing it, and I will save the world. It doesn't make any sense, right? It's ridiculous. It's not real. So if you want to do that, tongue in cheek or fun, then that's fine, but you can't pull off serious like that, right?
It could have been sneakers for all I cared, and it would have been fun, but this thing was dreary, and not only that, the plot was impenetrable. This thing moved at such
strange...
I rewound. That's a great term from the 80s. I went back a few chapters on the Blu-ray, and I put on the English subtitles, even though I'm an English speaker by... nature. By nature, you know, because that's real big nature, you know, and you get that there.
Our
native English speaker, I should say. And the whole point of this fact is I could not even understand. It was impenetrable reading what the script was. So why was anybody attracted to this material? Because Michael Mann was behind it, and even he didn't know what the fuck he was doing. Very disappointing year for filmmakers that I really respected, like Crow, like Mann.
Wachowski's
I liked. I mean, really a lot of big budget bombs. Guy Ritchie's on this, you know, I liked his work in the past. Mm-hmm. So really disappointing. What do you got number two?
I have We Are Your Friends.
Oh, you saw that. See, I didn't see that one. This is the different one. It's that bad, huh?
I hate this movie.
I thought this was the Saturday Night Fever of our generation.
No.
Is this the Can't Hardly Wait of our generation?
Can't hardly watch.
What's the problem with it?
Zac Efron, I guess. I don't know. What's his deal? I really don't like anyone in it, and it's just not a good movie.
All right. Honestly, what do you have as the worst film of 2015? What do you got?
Well, Taken 3.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
But only because it was such a letdown, because I really, I don't really like the Taken movies. I respect the first one. The second one's, actually, I like the second one better than the first one. But I don't really like them so much. And this finally looked like, you know, a John McClane version of Taken. I was like, holy shit, you know, there's going to be action and cool things are going to happen. And it was all a lie.
They lied to you. They got you. Like Terminator got me.
Biggest lie I've ever seen in my life. Trailer for Taken 3. Oh.
You know what the problem is with that movie as well, like you alluded to when we talked about it initially, is that the whole fucking movie would not take place if he just stopped and explained himself at any given moment. But because it's a movie and it needs to go on, he keeps running. He keeps evading the police and his pursuers, which everything could be cleared up with one conversation. Pisses me off.
Yeah, I don't get it. And then he like hurts. This doesn't make any sense.
He hurts people. He doesn't have to just because the plot dictates. All right, my worst film of 2015 was the little seat Sean Penn action here, The Gunman,
that's streaming right now on Netflix.
Do yourself a favor and avoid it at all costs. It is like the flu this season. Don't do it to yourself. You'll be down for 2 hours and don't know what hit you. This thing was, you know, stubby little Sean Penn, who's obviously on HGH because he's ripped out of his fucking mind, is running around with this thing, guns blazing. And the problem is, it would be fun if they, much like Black Hat and your problem with it, if they said, okay, this is like kind of a bullet in the head type situation. He's on a Stallone type character or a Liam Neeson type character, but he plays the thing like he's in some sort of Sidney Lumet film. I mean, he is so deadly serious. The plot is so... tries to be topical with what's going on in African nations and in the use of cheap labor to do all these kind of world nation projects, and it gets so convoluted through halfway through it that you just lose all interest. And this movie sucked. Just stay away from it. Horrible movie. That's a list of shit for you. I'll tell you that. Listen to our podcast, dude. That is a bad list.
Oh boy.
All
well,
right.
Hopefully we can do right. With the rest of the show.
Yeah, with the best of the show. I can't wait for that one, though, because I think we were pretty right on here. I got to say that out of the 15, I think we had at least 7 or 8 that were similar.
Yeah, you know, I think we will be pretty similar, because like I say, there's only a few breakouts, and everything else is pretty much lay of the land. You know, it's just, it's there. It's part of the scenery. I don't think that... You know, I'm trying to remember it now, but I can't really remember many. I think most of the ones that we really disagreed on, we already talked about right now in our worst of list.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the definitely. I hope that next year doesn't produce these kind of stinkers. But every year they just sneak up on you, because I looking at this list, I wouldn't have thought that a number of these would have made the list, including Terminator or Black Hat, you know, going into last year or this year.
Yeah.
All right, well, you got a chance. Let's get into some reviews. You got a chance to see The Hateful Eight, 70 millimeter. What's going on? Worth the trip, roadshow, intermission, 20 minutes longer. What's going on?
Yeah, good movie. I really like The Hateful Eight. As far as, you know, marrying old Tarantino with new Tarantino, really good. You know, he does a lot of the cinematic stuff that he's done in the past few films is present here, but also, you know, most of the movie takes place inside of a cabin. So it's very Reservoir Dogs. And so kind of a marrying of the two. So neat in that regard. Does it deserve to be shown an ultra wide on 70? No, of course not. It's not that cinematic. And because literally it's dudes in a cabin.
Right. A lot of close-ups, I imagine. Extreme close-ups in 70 millimeter.
You know, here and there. It's a really wide frame, so you know, you can't really do a lot of close-ups, you know, because a close-up includes, you know, everything else as well. It's so wide. And I understand, you know, now that I'm thinking about what I saw, I get that some of the scenes or some of the shots really have people standing or sitting on two very opposite sides of the frame. And in that regard, you couldn't use that shot because it would have to be cut off on the ends, you know, in order to be shown normally in the digital theaters, or whatever. So I understand why he had to switch out some shots, but it's nothing amazing, right? It's nothing. If you really wanted to show this at this aspect ratio in digital cinemas, guess what? You could. You know, I really don't understand the problem. You want to do it? You can do it. It's possible. Yeah.
What's the deal? Hearing. Let me ask you the three drawbacks I'm hearing. Was there any projection problems? Because there's been some reports of projection problems.
No. Flawless print. I mean, one thing that's nice about this, 3 hours long. The place I went to only had three showings. A lot of the other places have maybe five, but those start at 8:30 in the morning. So the prints are going to be really nice, you know, because they haven't been run through that often. So it was clean as all hell, you know, looked like digital projection.
How was the really intermission? Pretty. Was it at the right time?
Unfortunately, it's also around the time when he starts narrating things. And that's kind of at the moment where you think like, ooh, too indulgent, a little too much there, buddy. You're not that smart and it's not that good. And it is a Tarantino movie. You know, I feel like he misses the point or not. The point. I don't know what the theme of this movie is. It really doesn't apparently have a theme. Everyone lies in it. And that's the only thing I can find that marries everything together, because the ending does just fall apart. You know, after all these setups and all this long storytelling and these everything's people are saying, and you're kind of like taking all this in thinking, oh, maybe I can figure this out. And you can't really figure it out because it's so simple. And it just, you're just watching this thing play out, you know, where you think there's a master filmmaker at work here, and there isn't. There's a dude that can write really good dialogue, but that's it.
I'm hearing that it's more Agatha Christie than Sergio Leone.
Yes, but even then, there's no the mystery isn't there. You know, it's created by pure accident, if you will, because every scene is important, so we've made things important here, but other than that, you know, these little clues and things, they don't amount to anything. They aren't actually clues to anything.
I hope when the special edition DVD or Blu-ray, I should say, comes out in the future, which it no doubt will, some Criterion collection or whatnot, that they have the original script that was leaked online. Because I want to know if there was any changes made throughout the way of what was filmed now. If maybe that is some of the problems.
It's a real basic
third act.
Ending.
So you think that was the intended act the whole time?
I do, because I don't think that if there was something better, he wouldn't have changed it for this, because this is nothing. It's just an ending, right? It literally just wraps up like it ran out of time.
Which at 3 hours and 8 minutes, it's surprising that it does that.
But great acting and great dialogue. Like he gives, You have to admit, one thing about Tarantino is he gives actors enough to chew on, you know, for damn sure. And just when nothing's going on, these guys are sitting around, whether in a stagecoach or whether, you know, just in a cabin. And everything that they say has weight to it. You're just like, oh, wow. You know, like you're intrigued and interested in absolutely nothing than just people talking. It's kind of amazing.
Which is what I found to be the case with Inglourious Basterds, which also makes it very hard for me to go back and revisit some Tarantino flicks.
Yeah, exactly. This is, you know, a lot of less action than Inglourious Basterds and Django. And after those, I had expected this to be a real Western, right? An action Western where people, because that's basically what Django kind of is. You know, there's a lot of action in it to go along with the talking stuff. And this, there's just not a lot of action. There's a lot of talking.
So you're basically what I'm hearing from you is that it's a good 3-star movie.
And the whole roadshow thing's a fucking joke. I mean, there were some, you know, handouts, some pamphlet things that you get. I mean, they're not really pamphlets. They're like a book thing, you know, that you can look through. But this whole 70mm thing, I think it's time to give up, guys, on the film stuff, because I don't see the point of it. You know, I've seen the laser projection that IMAX has, and it blows this out of the fucking water.
Yeah, like, this is the reason we've moved on.
Hands down, blows this out of the water. Is it sharp? Yeah, it's really sharp. 70mm is really sharp. You want to know what's sharper? The laser IMAX. I mean, absolutely blows out of the water. So I don't get it. And there's nothing, excuse me, there's nothing in the projection, you know, there's a different flicker to it, which I thought was neat because, you know, it starts up and it's snowy, so there's white, so you can see that flicker. And you think, oh, wow, I remember this flicker.
Yeah, everyone movies are like this. You got cigarette burns in the whole nine.
That was it. That was the only thing that I didn't even really notice any cigarette burns or anything in it because it's a very wide screen. But that's it. That was the only thing. You know, there's no – whatever's happening in that projection room, whether it be film or digital, I have nothing to do with it. You know, so it doesn't fucking matter what it is that's making those images. You know, it's just – I don't understand. It's not – that's really not the point of going to the cinema and everything. The fun part of that was seeing people react to something on the screen. You know, people were laughing in moments that I didn't think were – quite that funny, but I thought were kind of funny. So you kind of get this weird different feel to the movie. And in a way, going to a crowded theater sometimes is, you know, you're reminded of why it's so good, because it makes you like the movie a little bit more,
which I think heavily has helped Star Wars in a lot of ways.
Yeah, probably, definitely, for sure.
And Creed, even. I got to be honest. Like, people really went along with Creed and hearing cheering and crying and clapping.
Yeah, exactly.
It's unbelievable sometimes in a crowded theater. It gets you back to that, I don't want to say inaugural experience, but that 80s experience when we all waited in line and it was only showing every 2 hours. Maybe it was on 2 screens.
And it's a shared experience. You know, you see something and you kind of smile or chuckle a little bit. And to get that feedback for other people also enjoying that at the same time, like, oh, I'm not an idiot.
Yeah, dreaming together. You're all dreaming together in a sense. All right. So I saw The Revenant, the other snowbound Western frontier movie, if you will. Leonardo DiCaprio, heavily, heavily hyped movie. I'm luckily playing in the city I live in. And I got a chance to catch it. And the thing is fantastic. It's as advertised. Beautifully shot. Sean Penn had said earlier in the week to Variety that he considered this to be as close to Apocalypse Now as anything he's ever seen. I would support that, but I would throw in a little bit Terrence Malick in there for the overt spirituality this movie has and the beautiful shots of guys staring off into vast vistas and abysses and just crazy things. I mean, even small – I mean, the guy's story is unbelievable. The Huey Glass story is out of control. And anybody that's a fan of history, I know you are. You know this story. But a lot of people didn't know
– It's insane, yeah.
That he gets, you know, mauled by a bear, which
raped
happens –
Raped by a bear, right. How was that scene?
He didn't get raped by a bear. That's absolute bullshit. The bear's behind him eating his spine. If anyone that says he got raped by a bear, that's the most asinine thing I've ever heard, honestly.
It was a quote from a review that was taken out of context, really.
Well, if anything,
it's funny that some people think that was real.
What's great is that for a CGI moment, that is absolutely believable. You know,
is it's
a
great CGI? Moment.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, they didn't get a real black bear on top of him, I promise you.
No. I mean, they haven't said what's been CGI, what he won't say yet how they created that scene, you know, what was cutaways to real bears and stuff. I remember you say CGI, but they could easily overlay a real bear in there as well.
I'm not sure how that was accomplished, but it is absolutely not
it's
only
amazing,
is that,
though,
it's not an amazing scene because the movie's full of so many different scenes that are so rich in their own sense that it's hard to differentiate what was my favorite scene or what was the most harrowing scene because the guy is just faced with all sorts of setbacks, you know, whether it be the land, you know, the weather, the animals, the Indians that are hunting, the Native Americans that are hunting in the different tribes, his other people that are out to get him, you know, the other bear trappers that are out. It's just a story about a guy whose the survival is, it's just a miserable experience. To be honest with you, I came out of it a little bit wrung out. I was a little bit emotionally drained from the experience. And everybody, it's a technical fucking marvel, I'll tell you that. I mean, every category it should deserve to win that it's in, because it's beautifully done in so many ways, and the blood and the sweat is on screen. But I can't say it's a movie I necessarily would ever want to revisit, because that opening scene is like Saving Private Ryan for cowboys and Indian battles, you know, frontiersmen versus the Pawnee, or I think they were. It was unbelievably gory and just horrific, and done so many one single shot takes that you stop even noticing after a while. I mean, there's really very few close-ups because everything's done in one long sweeping take throughout the film. But he's going to win director. DiCaprio should win actor. Hardy is a strong contender for best supporting actor. It's a lock for, you know, cinematography, sound, all that.
Do you think he's going to do it 2 years in a row? Huh?
He absolutely. This is stronger than Birdman. 100%. Now, if Birdman had come this year, if this was last year's film, and if Birdman had followed this, I'd say, I don't know. He got it last year. It's questionable. But the jig's not
sense.
Up here. Yeah, it really isn't.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but everyone's echoing pretty much what you've said about it. So I do believe that this is the strongest contender right now.
I think
best picture of the year, as well as you say, actor and director.
You know the story here of the real situation. I think that you'll love this movie when you see it. I really do. I think that we'll be talking about this in the future.
And DiCaprio is so good as well. I mean, I haven't seen this yet, but I'm already gushing. But you can't – DiCaprio is just one of those surprising actors that every time you go in, you kind of can't believe that he would be any good at anything. And then he's really good, right?
It's strange because I don't ever like seek out a DiCaprio movie.
No, I know exactly.
It's not like a Tom Cruise movie. Like, I'm going to go see the new Tom Cruise.
You don't go in ever thinking, DiCaprio's in this. Oh, yeah.
And he knocks it out of the ballpark every time.
But he always does.
Yeah, I agree. He was not the flash in the pan. You know, you could even say Ryan Gosling's a flash in the pan. A lot of these guys that have come and gone that were supposed to be next to DiCaprio, Zac Efron, even in a lot of ways. And none of them have proven to have the chops that he's had and the longevity that he's had and the brilliant career choices. The fact that this guy's been managed to make Oscar-type movies that do stellar at the box office. I mean, you look at Wolf of Wall Street, that did $125 million, $300 million globally, got nominated for 10 Oscars.
Well, he seems to be
– it's unbelievable.
Positioned himself so well that, you know, directors who are in themselves in a position – to put his career in that right place in the awards corridor, they want him.
Could be interesting that he's going to be up best. I think he's getting nominated for best actor, even though this doesn't happen until January 14th or the nomination dates. But for the Oscars, I do believe he will be facing off against Fassbender, who played Steve Jobs, which was a role that DiCaprio walked away from when Fincher left the project initially, even though he didn't want to work with.
At this point,
he could have worked with Danny Boyle, who he'd already worked with, but he decided to do this and work with Iratu, I think is how you say his name. I don't want to get too crazy into this, but regardless.
There's a lot of accents and squigglies and things in that name.
If DiCaprio does win the Oscar this year, it's not going to be a gimme because he didn't get it for The Departed or for Titanic or whatever, Blood Diamond or whatever else he may have been up for.
Diamond. You
know, or The Aviator. He was nominated for all those movies. I mean,
I know, but please.
But he was a nominated. He didn't get it. I think it's four times now. So it's not going to be a gimme if he wins this year. It's going to be on the merit that this movie kicks fucking ass. And you can quote that on the back of the DVD.
They won't, but you think.
I give him permission to. I'm giving them gems.
Putting it out there.
So what's up with A Very Merry Christmas? I saw about 30 minutes of this.
Did you watch a little bit of it?
I hated this fucking thing. You like this?
I just love Sofia Coppola. This is a dog shit movie, and Sofia Coppola really
needs to stop. It's not a movie. It's nothing.
This is what I've thought about most of her movies.
It's a Saturday Night Live bad skit is what I thought of it. That's what I kept thinking to me. It's like, oh, it's a bad guest on Saturday Night Live.
This is what she does, though. This is what she's done forever. It's just boring. moments is the best way I can explain it. And this just doesn't make sense. And the singing's just horrendous all the way
around. It's not funny, and it goes on on and on. It reminded me of those old Dean Martin things.
Yeah, this meta in-joke thing, and it's just not.
It's not funny. Good. It's not amusing. It's bad. Do you remember those HBO specials in the 80s that were like comedy specials? Do you recall those? Even sure. Sarah Silverman had one. And they would start off with like a shitty skit. You know, and it would be like lead into like their comedy act. That's this is what that reminded me of.
They're still like that.
Well, that's terrible. But that's like what it reminded me of the entire time with this was like a collection of those shitty little skits before a comedy act.
Yeah, I mean, that's
went
a good,
nowhere.
That's a good comparison. Yeah, this one's just bad. Scrooged, you know, classic. Watch that.
Scrooge is a classic. I saw A Christmas Carol, the play, recently, a really nice production of it last week. And watching that, I'm just going in my mind as I was watching it, how Scrooge played with things and how they changed this and that. But they stayed so true to that Christmas story, literally that structure and that formula. And it was so inventive how they, you know, twist this around or twisted that around. My appreciation for Scrooge grew after watching Christmas Carol live, strangely enough. Which, you know, I know Scrooge is a perennial favorite during the year, and obviously Christmas Story is. But I got to throw out there that The Family Man. I watched The Family Man.
Yeah, it's a good Christmas one.
It's not only a good Christmas movie, it's a good – I think it might be Brett Ratner's best movie. I mean, that is a great fucking movie. It might be Nicolas Cage's best movie. That's saying
oh,
something.
Oh, please.
His best comedy? His best romantic comedy? Can I get that?
I don't know.
Honeymoon in Vegas, Fighting Me? All right. All right.
I don't know.
You're a big fan of It Could Happen to You, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
You like guarding tests. I know you. I know you, mister.
I do. I like old ladies.
I know you do. That's why you got in trouble. That's why you can't go near schools.
I mean, Raising Arizona. I don't know what else there could be. There's so many Nicolas Cage movies. You're asking me to remember an entire library.
And all you've
God.
Done, this is pre-DVD release. This is like pre the current era of
my God. It's too many movies.
Season of the Witch. We can really go back and get some weird ones out. Drive Angry. All right.
God.
What's A Case of You? What is this all about?
This is the Justin Long movie that is now available streaming on Netflix.
I didn't even know there was a Justin Long movie. Did we see a trailer for this?
Did
I don't recall
I.
this.
No, I just saw it on Netflix, so I watched it. And I gotta say, I liked it. Mainly because how do you not love Justin Long?
He's the shit, right? I love this kid.
He's just awesome. He's, you know, he's goofy, but then he's cool at the same time. He's just one of those guys that just works on screen, and works in this movie as well. And he just kind of plays a doofus, young writer guy, and he decides that he really likes this girl, who works at this coffee shop, and so he looks up her Facebook profile and pretends to be the guy that she wants, you know, just goes through her likes and decides that he likes all those things as well. And it's just a nice little movie, you know. It doesn't ever try to be incredibly funny or touching or anything, but it was good. I liked everyone in it. Justin Long. I like Evan Rachel Wood is the girl in this. She was good in this. Had a lot of weird cameos. Sienna Miller was in this for a second. Peter Dinklage is in this. Sam Rockwell, Vince Vaughn, just a lot of people. Brendan Fraser, a lot of people did just show up. That obviously, he's a producer on this. I think it might have been his company that made this or something.
So he's calling all the favors.
But that's what I mean. Yeah, a lot of people who came out clearly for him, and he just seems like such a nice guy. It's not surprising.
You know, I do like him, but only in supporting roles. I didn't care for him in his lead, that Going the Distance with Drew Barrymore. I really didn't like that. Mm-hmm. But I loved him, obviously, in Live Free or Die Hard, where he just stole the show as a sidekick. Really, mm-hmm. one of the better sidekicks, I thought, since Leo Getz.
So you don't like the Weapon. Movies that, like, I mean, really?
I've never really liked anything that he's headlined.
Accepted?
I've never seen Accepted.
Oh,
tell me all
sake.
The time to see it. Well, you act like everybody else has. We made 5.1.
They have seen it, man. Everyone's seen it.
I'll watch it because of Amber Heard, but that's about it. That's it. Then I'll get back to you on that.
No, she's not in that one.
She's not?
Your other girl is.
Fuck. I don't know if I'll watch it then.
No, you'll still watch it. Your other girl.
I got another one?
You know, what's her name?
Got a harem, apparently.
The Ryan Reynolds girl.
Oh, Blake Lively.
Yeah, there you go.
I will watch Accepted.
A young Blake Lively.
I'll be more than happy to watch Accepted. Mission accepted, my man. Barry Goldberg is on the case.
Yeah, seriously.
There's my 90th Goldberg reference. Tell you people to watch it throughout the season. If I don't single-handedly help that
it's
season.
Good. If you have Hulu.
It's worth watching. I mean, you are missing out on a good television show. Stop watching The Big Bang Theory. Help this one out.
But yeah.
All right, I saw Concussion over the holiday season, and I gotta say, this
did it give you a concussion?
It didn't. It actually opened my eyes a little bit to what's going on here. And I'm a big football fan, but this was a good movie, but not a great movie. A great performance from Will Smith, Albert Brooks, Alec Baldwin, David Morris as Mike Webster, the Steelers great, who has a heart attack and he's the first case of CTE that's discovered. This is, like I said, a really good movie that I think the story, though, is in real life is so ungainly and so many different strands and took so long to come together to make the changes that we do have now in the game, like the concussion protocol and things like that, that it's hard to fit into a three-act structure. So it doesn't really hit all the beats it needs to hit. I feel like this movie is a little awkward in some senses. And I know that's but this director, Peter Landam, has done a crazy good job in his previous movie called Kill the Messenger with Jeremy Renner about a San Jose Mercury reporter who's being just scrutinized for his work. And that movie is also ungainly in real life. And he did a great job in molding that. So I guess I was expecting just a little bit more from this. But I'll say this. It's better than the previews led it to look. I thought that this was going to be really pat and kind of uninteresting, but it's about as good as they could have done with this, and it doesn't play soft. This isn't a movie that was softened for the NFL. It's all the facts are there, and it's not as emotionally impactful as I thought it would be, but at the same time, it's engrossing, and I recommend it. It's just not the great movie I thought it was going to be, but Smith does deserve to be mentioned with the great performances of the year. I don't know if it's Oscar-worthy, but it's maybe his finest work in a drama. And I really liked Ali, so I feel like it's kind of saying much. He does good, though, when he's playing somebody. You know, he really can get – I feel like he's a little bit more believable in dramas when he's playing somebody else. I liked Focus, but this is – you know, I gave him both 3 stars, but obviously this is a better movie than Focus. But it's not the 4-star movie I thought it was going to be. I mean, The Revenant is the best picture of the two, or the better picture of the two.
Yeah.
All right, so last, surely not least, but very quickly here, Star Wars: The Force Awakens. I really want to wait till you see this to get into it, but
I know I'm seeing it this week sometime.
All right, well then, maybe I'll hold back until next week to give you my review. Let's do that.
All right,
fair enough.
Then we can gush about it together, apparently, because
you're
gushing, right? I mean, you liked it.
Well, I'll be –
4 stars? I mean, just tell me your star level.
I would say 3 to 3.5. I'm not going full 4-star on this, but
– I mean, everyone's full –
everyone's full sail on this?
Well,
maybe, you know what, fuck it.
Erected 4 stars at this point.
Maybe I am 4 stars on this, though. I do think that it starts a little slow for my liking for a couple scenes. But once that second hour kicks in, my goodness, that thing flies to its conclusion.
That second hour.
Well, you know what I mean? Like once we get past the hour mark. I think the first hour has a couple scenes that could have been trimmed but that are necessary for what they're trying to
do. They always do that, I guess, though.
It's the problem of the 2-hour and 20-minute movie. You'll see what I'm talking about.
I'll see it. All right. Yeah.
Of course you'll see it. Everybody see it. You'll see it at least once.
No, I refuse to watch. Maybe it's the movie I'll never see.
No.
Never.
It's your memento? It's your memento? I've never seen Memento. I refuse to.
No, you've never seen Accepted.
Well, yeah. There you go. Memento and Accepted. The 2 gems of cinema. Okay, let's get on to trailers. Let's get the captain.
Captain?
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Oh, boy.
We're going long tonight, guys. We're giving you a longer show. Boy. We've been off the air for a couple of episodes here, a couple of weeks. So
a couple of years.
Back. Yeah, you know. Maybe we might be. You never know. Let's talk about Richard Linklater's latest, Everybody Wants Some. This is clearly Dazed and Confused for the 80s. They're selling it that way through the blurbs and through – and I find this kind of – not that great and sad.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I don't want some.
I didn't think this was intriguing. I felt this was kind of sad that he went back and he has to kind of reboot his own or redo his own movie in a different time period 20 years later.
Yeah, and it looks like a low budget movie that just not a lot of you know, the more I watch Richard Linklater stuff, the more I feel like he doesn't put a lot of thought into the things that either that he's shooting or that he's writing. And this just, it's just there. It's on screen. It's there. People are going through the motions and he's shooting something, but nothing. There's no moment in this trailer. There's just no moment in this trailer where I think, oh, that's what this movie is, or that's a funny part of the movie, or I want to see this movie.
This could have been a YouTube.
Was there any part of this that you thought?
No.
No.
This could have been a YouTube video that anybody made as a spoof to Dazed and Confused set in the 80s. This didn't look like it had.
It would be a horrible spoof trailer.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I didn't find this to be I felt like this was him trying to search for what worked.
Well, I didn't get the quotes, you know, oh, surprisingly deep and all this and that, but surprisingly not deep in the trailer. I mean, where the wonderful quotes, where was any of that in the actual trailer? You know, I have a feeling this is a very flat movie.
It looked like that, and maybe it's impossible to go back and capture that kind of lazy spirit of Dazed and Confused at this stage in his career, or with, you know, the, it's almost like a meta version of that. You know, it's too self-aware, it looked like. Let's move on and talk about Independence Day 2, another sequel that is 20
years in the making.
And I gotta be honest, I like this teaser trailer. This isn't a full-length trailer.
Holy shit, why does it look so good?
I know, right?
What I was the only one too. Everyone else, I watched this with a couple people over the holiday week, and they were like, that looks stupid. And I was like, no, god damn it, that looks fucking amazing. I want to watch that movie right the fuck now.
Put Roland Emmerich on it. I'm glad it's coming out July 4th weekend. That's when this show, I like a good alien invasion
so
movie
good?
Over the summer. You know, that's my bread
Roland
and butter.
Emmerich movies often look good in trailers, and then when you watch them, they're giant pieces of shit.
Of course, but that's not the point of a summer blockbuster. It's to steal your money.
It is the point at this point. I am a little worried. If it's going to be dog shit, I'm going to be let down. But it looks great. It really does. I think this trailer, as you said, is an exciting trailer. And it's just, it's interesting that to see this come out now, because obviously we've had so many of these types of movies, and you know, Battleship comes to mind. But you watch this and it doesn't, it seems completely void of any of the wrongdoings that Battleship did.
It also seems to me that this is learned to, like, if you're going to go back and get somebody, get back the real people. We got Bill Pullman playing an ex-president. We got
but
Jeff
where's
Goldblum.
Randy Quaid?
I'll tell you where. He's hiding out on the border of Canada and America trying to get in. I mean, what we don't need is Sweaty Eddie, okay? Get him the fuck out of here. Randy Quaid. Nobody need Dennis Quaid hasn't seen Randy Quaid. Nobody knows where Randy Quaid is. He's hunting down Meg Ryan. Remember when I was your brother-in-law? All right, let's move on to the next big sci-fi movie. We got Star Trek Beyond, the third film in the Star Trek franchise that is being helmed now by Justin Lin. It's got the big blurb on the front, executive produced by J.J. Abrams, to let you know that it has some sort of semblance with Star Wars. And first thing that hit me was, what's up with the retro haircuts all of a sudden? Why does Kirk have like the William Shatner comb over from 1964? What is that all about?
I didn't notice the hair. I don't know what that says about you.
I'm a fashionista. Thank you. Yeah,
you're really dialed in on the look of the actors.
Me and Paul Mitchell. It's silky smooth. Okay.
I don't like this one so much. I noticed their haircuts are no good. No, I don't like. I didn't notice that. I thought they looked the same a little bit. I don't know how to respond to that.
You're gonna see it now when you look.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure. I'm gonna have to look. I like this trailer. I thought this looked good. This would remind me that Star Trek is going for a bit of a different thing than Star Wars. You know, it's kind of trying to be the bad boys of sci-fi in a sense. So I like it. I like Star Trek. I like the characters. So.
I never cared for Star Trek when I was younger. I was more Star Wars. But if you look at Star Wars, and it's hard to, it's more fantasy, less science fiction. You know, it's really medieval in a lot of ways, and the
sure.
Shakespearean, and there's a lot of, you know, family stuff obviously going on, and but it's very, you look at the, you know, specifically the last couple scenes in this new Star Wars, it's medieval Excalibur type root show, but Star Trek is, I always felt like the originals were just a metaphor for the Cold War. I mean, Russia, the Klingons, and the whole nine. It's fun to look at it like that, but it's way more with, I don't want to say political, but it has an intellectual level that is a little bit more, you know,
well, it's definitely more based
bureaucracy.
In the reality that we're in right now, whereas Star Wars, as you said, you know, is, you know, a galaxy far, far away and a long time ago, right? Exactly. So It's fairly removed from us now.
But to be having said that, which is, I guess, stating the obvious in a lot of ways, it's because everyone knows that Star Trek is more futuristic. It's set so far in the future. But these movies now, it seems like they're correcting the error of the second one and not trying to make it so dark, in that it's maybe going to be a little bit more adventure, which is what this
needs. Second one.
I know, but you're the only one, my man. Even J.J. Abrams and his writers have said now.
I don't know why. I like the second one quite a bit. I like the first one. I like the second one. I like this one. I really don't see that big of a difference. You say it's dark. I didn't really notice it was that dark.
I just thought it was too topical. You know,
I didn't realize you were so racist against the darker skinned aliens. But I mean,
no, I just thought it was too topical in the terrorism aspect. I just wasn't looking for that.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, I thought that gave it too much of a level of realism and real world problems that made it a little bit less fun.
It is better when they go out and actually explore the universe.
Yeah, and
I agree with you on that. Rather than, it is always kind of a bore when they have to come back to Earth and protect Earth. You know, that's kind of like, well, shit, you know, I see Earth every day. Go to a damn alien planet.
Right, especially a domestic terrorist. You know, I really wasn't looking forward to that. But it still was superior entertainment compared to some of the shit that's come out in the years since. But I think this third one does look a step above the last one, or at least looks good.
It looks like silly fun, which is what I like from them. And they're using the characters well. I thought even in the second one, but even in this, you know, Bones being left by Spock, you know, typical.
Love it.
That kind of stuff. It's just, it's right on the money.
I don't think this series is ever going to achieve the level of surprise that the first one did, because it was so good, you know, like nobody was expecting that. And the word of mouth was so great. But I do think that they can reach a level of fun again. And this looked like it had that because of those little one-liners. Let's talk about another science fiction shoot-off here. This is Moonwalkers, a strange little film about a conspiracy theory that Kubrick faked the Apollo moon landings. I mean, everybody knows this this conspiracy theory, but this is a story that's centering around your man there, Ron Perlman, going and recruiting Kubrick, but they don't find the real Kubrick, do they? I'll let you take it from there. What happens there?
No, so Rupert Grint, the redheaded kid from Harry Potter, Ron Perlman plays some sort of government agency guy. And he gets tasked to go, you know, hire Kubrick to do this. And he runs into Rupert Grint, who says that he knows Kubrick, right? But he gets an impersonator. And, of course, Ron Perlman finds out. But he doesn't want to have to go back and tell people that he hired the wrong Kubrick. So they decide to make this fake moon landing movie anyhow. So it's kind of a... Again, I guess a meta, you know, we're watching filmmakers at work, but kind of a fun throwback thing, you know, that Zach and Miri had where they made the fake Star Wars porno. You know, it looks kind of like something like that.
It does, but it also has gratuitous violence in some of these scenes. Like,
sure,
people getting shot in the head and whatnot. I mean, do you know what movie they need to make? Is the Sidney Pollack story about him being a fucking agent over there in other countries. Yeah, now that's a good story. This looked like some sort of lark, much like the last producer, was it, with Alec Baldwin, where the FBI agents tried to make the fake movie to get the mobsters. It kind of looked like that, but mixed with some sort of Guy Ritchie gangster element. I didn't understand what the trailer was trying to sell.
As to what the true part of this is.
Yeah, is it a gangster film? Is it about the making of the movie?
Wait, is this true that they faked it?
Yeah,
because it could be. I mean, this sounds like something that could be true for all I know, but or is it just that it's true that people think that Stanley Kubrick made the moon landing? Is, you know, what's true? What's the based on?
Well, it says very cleverly, based on a true conspiracy theory.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's kind of so.
So it's like based on a true underdog story,
right? Yeah.
Dodgeball, you know, it's like,
yeah. So maybe the whole thing's made up, but it looks interesting for a rental, I'll say.
Yeah, I'd give this one a Netflix stream. That's about it. I don't even rent it.
That's the same thing. Yeah.
Okay, are we going with the same thing? No red box.
What's the difference?
There'll be none. I'm not paying.
No, I don't even know. Would this be in a red box? Make the cut?
I'm just surprised. Rupert Grint, is that his name? Gint.
Rupert Grint.
Yeah, Grint. I thought I pegged him as like an alcoholic in the making. I thought he was like an Anthony Michael Hall. I thought he'd be done by now, but hey, good for him.
It's hard to tell, you know, while they're making a movie. You got to keep an eye out on the TMZ for those in-between moments.
Well, let's talk about Whiskey Foxtrot Tango or Whiskey Tango
Whiskey
Foxtrot.
Tango Foxtrot.
Yeah, I make it my own way. Yeah. Or WTF, as in what the fuck is going on in this movie? This is what it's got Billy Bob Thornton, much like our brand is Crisis, but this looks not as, I guess, self-aware as that movie was, in that it was trying to be funny, whereas this looks a little bit more Three Kings-ish, I should say, where the humor looks a little bit more
evolved. I like this kind of stuff. Evolved, I think this looks pretty good.
Do you? I didn't think this looked good at all.
Really? No, I like it. I'd like to see. I mean, this sounds like an interesting story to me. It's true. Ish.
Ish. Yeah.
I guess you should always say it's true-ish. Right. But I don't know. I like these kinds of movies about people that go out on an adventure like this, go out, you know, stray out of their safe zone, and it's something that's realistic, you know.
I thought the last bit worked in the trailer, but I thought most of the trailer.
Was classic was Tina Fey comedy. I mean, yeah. I'd still be interested in watching this, but
didn't work for me.
Yeah, it looks like an easy watch. So,
what about Deserito? I believe it's
Deserito.
Alphonse Cuarón.
Deserito.
Gravity, his new film, which looks like a little bit of a small film, written
Jonas
by his
Cuarón
with his brother Jonas. Or I'm sorry, his son. And
No. Jonas directed and wrote. I don't know. Brother, right?
Yeah, he wrote.
I don't know. Gravity directed film. And wrote this, though.
Okay, so this, though.
I don't know so much what the other one, the real one, had anything to do with this.
This is about a guy crossing the Mexican, the Rio Grande, it looks like, into Texas. And it's been taken out by a hostile, gun-toting patriot, American. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who looks psychotic in this. And this looks thrilling and. My kind of movie, to be honest with you.
This looks
I like
really
these
good.
Man versus man versus nature kind of movies. I really
and
really
Jeffrey Dean
see
Morgan
this.
Looks scary in this.
He has a very he's able to pull
he's
off
rough and
comedic,
gruff,
but he's able to pull off these dark moments in movies too. He has a kind of a dark
I like
side.
Him, yeah.
I like him a lot, and I don't know who's playing the lead actor in this, but he looks like he's doing a hell of a job too. And this looks like the kind of movie where you're just, you know, a white knuckle type movie, if you will, where it just it's visceral. You know, it's not through the writing; it's through situations that everybody can relate to. You know, it's primal, the fear of being hunted and trapped where you don't know, and you know, and survival and all that. I love this kind of shit. I can't wait to see this.
There was. I mean, there's that Michael Douglas movie not too long ago.
Yeah, Beyond the Reach. It reminded
Beyond
me
the
very
Reach,
much of that.
I never saw, but yeah, but this actually looks better, so I'd rather watch this.
Much like Killing Season. Do you remember the Travolta, Robert De Niro
sure,
one?
Yeah.
Things like that. And I think that one of the pinnacles of this subgenre of action films, dramas, whatever you want to call this, that nobody ever talks about is that The Hunted. Do you remember that movie?
Right, sure, which is basically
great.
Rambo.
But it is, and I would normally hate that because I'm such a big Rambo fan. But The Hunted is done.
It's
with
a good
such
movie.
Skill. Yeah, you can't.
I mean, yeah, that's one of the last. Yeah, that is actually The Hunted may be one of the last really true, just straight up, you know, action movies that I've seen in a long time. Like this has a twist to it, right? Everything has a twist to it as of late. But that The Hunted, there's no twist. It's just an action movie.
It's that movie's very simplistic in its means and. Some movies get penalized for being overly simplistic, but other times I appreciate, you know, non-clutter in a narrative.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be overly complicated just because we have the running time. You know, it's not needed.
Oh, we run all right.
Oh, and we've run over tonight on our show. Thank you guys for staying with us on this long version, 292, the last of 2015. It's been a good year here podcasting. We want to thank you guys, our loyal audience, our worldwide audience. We have an international reach. It's unbelievable to us, but we appreciate everyone listening to us year after year, episode after episode. We want to thank you for your support and continue to support us. Go to the Facebook page, like us, download past episodes if you haven't heard it, but keep this party going, and we'll do the same here in 2016. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we, as always, are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!